Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. For those of you who know me well, you know that I love events. And some of you know that I even emceed the Sales 3.0 for many years, probably 6 or 7 years. I love attending trade shows. I love attending events. I love conferences. And the thing I love the most about it is the networking. And so I'm very fond of any software or app that can help us network better at events and help sponsors get better opportunity at events and generate leads from events, because that's what all of my clients want to do. And I know that most of you listening want to generate leads from your events too. So I'm really excited to have the founder and CEO of EventMobi today. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks, Alice. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here to talk about one of my favorite things. So tell us a little bit about what EventMobi does, and then we'll rewind back to when you started the company.
Oh, God. So EventMobi is an event management software platform. At its core, it's an event app that's made to help increase the level of engagement between attendees, provide access to information. Obviously, before pandemic, you downloaded an app and you went to a conference or your sales kickoff, since we're talking about sales here, and you knew who's coming, you knew what the next session is, you could connect to people, you can answer polls. And during the pandemic, it became a virtual platform. So we helped a lot of our customers kind of pivot online so they can continue having those conversations. In a way, it not only helps, I think, attendees in a lot of ways, because we are all attendees going to events, but a huge portion of our software is also for event planners and event organizers. So it helps them organize the content for their events, plan better, have access to analytics, basically help prepare their exhibitors and speakers for the event. Sell tickets, websites, all that fun stuff that you do for events.
Yeah, handling all the details in one place is really important. And you made a post on LinkedIn a couple of days ago about some of the huge benefits of using an event app, and definitely keeping everything in one place is one of those, as well as networking and helping the sponsors. And I know that when I spend a lot of money to go to an event or exhibit at an event, or especially when my clients do, some of my clients spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and go to many large events and have big booths, and you know, it's expensive, right? It has to be worthwhile. And I think these event apps can really help them if they use them well, right? So pretty exciting industry. I know with the pandemic, all the virtual happened. And then now we have a recession. So it's interesting to see what's happening to events, but we'll come back to that. So take us back 14 years, if you can remember, because that is a long time ago. And tell us what you were doing right before you started this. Did you come from the event industry? Were you selling? You know, what were you doing right before? And then what gave you the idea to build an app for events? And then we'll get into how you moved from there.
Yeah, the stories of every startup is really fun, and in a lot of ways, very unexpected. And for me, it was maybe a bit of both. So my background is engineering, this EventMobi is actually my fourth startup.
Oh, wow.
But the only one that actually scaled. So the other three, I learned how to kill them fast. So let's put it that way. And I was working for a company called NVIDIA in the Valley, and I was in their mobile division. So we were basically building the inside of the future of phones. So at that time, I had sort of this insight into what the future is going to be with mobile devices. And on the side, I just loved going to trade shows and conferences. For me, it was this experience of going to somewhere unknown, And you meet all these amazing new people that you've never before. It's almost like a party every time you go to intense education. I mean, if you think about it, 14 years ago, obviously we had internet, but the level of content was not to this level. So you conferences.
Yeah, we needed to go to conferences to learn.
Yeah, so
it wasn't all online. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of the impetus of that. So I could see the future of mobile. I had this passion for events. And I always wonder, I went to these events, they would give you this tote bag full of paper and this show guide that's 300 pages. And I'm like, and back then, before iPhone, I had my sort of, I can't remember which phone I had with the stylus. And I'm like, why is this not here? Why can't I not search this? So that was kind of the beginning story of it. It was really a personal sort of need to have a better experience.
Yeah.
And I was also doing my MBA at Santa Clara University on the side. And I had this opportunity to kind of pitch this new business idea to my classmates. And they gave me amazing feedback. So my classmates were already actually, one of them that gave me feedback, interesting enough, he was VP of sales at one of the semiconductor companies in the Valley. And he said, hey, we have our sales conference. It's funny, actually, today's conversation is all about sales. So they were running, the first use of Eventmobi was at a sales conference. And he allowed us to test it and we got really good feedback. And we decided to do that knowing that we actually had two parts of the business. We had to create this product that really helps attendees. Yeah. But at the same time, I had, and this might come up in our conversation today, I was so close to the customer because this product did not exist, right? So we were building a product that no one had ever heard of, like an event app, software for events. It did not really, registration existed, but this product didn't. So in a lot of ways, I was exploring this opportunity, but at the same time, I was trying to learn. And while I was learning, I realized the other part of the product we have to build is actually a platform for planners and those that organize events because their data was all over the place. They were getting pictures from speakers and emails and it was a mess. Everything was in Excel. And we kind of created a platform to help them organize their data. And because they had that, creating an event app became really easy. So it became almost like a do-it-yourself SaaS product to build apps for conferences. And again, being kind of one of the first companies to market, it was a lot of fun.
That's great. And thinking about the back end of it too, like the event planner. So the participants, right, they have an experience, but the planner has an experience also. And your software made it easier for them to do their planning as well. So, all right. So you got that idea and you decided, oh, I think I'll start a business. Or you said you had had four. So you had maybe done a couple of those startups, like shut them down fast, and then were working for somebody else and decided to go again? Or how did that happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think honestly, at the beginning for a lot of startup founders, sales is not the main concern. And it sounds kind of crazy. And if any VC is hearing, they're like, no, that shouldn't be the case. But in reality, you want to make sure you have product market fit. Like there is no point going and trying to sell something that no one wants to use. So at the beginning, the first year of trying to build this product was trying to understand, does anybody want to use this? And will they pay for it? So remember.
So were you still working at the same time you were trying to figure this out? Yeah, yeah.
I had a job. Oh, I hope my old boss is not listening. But the first 9 months of the business was actually I was doing this on the side while I was doing my MBA and had a full-time job. Yeah. And the recession in 2009 hit. And that's when I'm like, okay, this is the best time to start a business. And I moved back with my mom, back then, 30 years old. And so it was very interesting time. But I think what gave me a lot of confidence at that time was this conversation with customers. So to build the product and to understand if it's the right product market fit, I had to talk to so many people.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And I am not a natural salesperson. Let me tell you that. I hated picking up a phone call to just like to order like internet service. Like that's the type of engineer I was. But when you kind of start talking to so many customers to build your product, just selling becomes natural because you understand what the need is. Yeah. And all you have to do, I think, as a really good salesperson is you have to listen, but you also have to create this vision of success for your customers. And I did that really, really well. I think this creating a vision for hiring a few people that we did at the beginning, but also trying to sell the product to early customers. It was quite a story. I actually don't know. I think every CEO that sold their first few products, if they think back, they're like, how did I even convince them to buy that early product? But it happens.
Yeah, I can tell you the answer to that, actually. But I want to pause for a minute and talk about what you said is pinning the vision for their success, right? That is really what sales is about. And if you are a good listener, you have intriguing questions, you can bring insight and you can paint that picture. Everybody wants to know how they're going to win, right? Everybody wants to know what is the best outcome I can get. And if you can't paint that picture for them, especially today, you're not going to get the sale, right? And I don't think we're teaching our sellers how to do that well enough. And it's also something that I think happens when founders start hiring their first salespeople. Those salespeople don't know how to paint the vision as well as the founder did. So back to what you said is, oh my gosh, any founder who's ever sold anything probably sits there wondering, how did I close those first few deals? The answer to that is entrepreneurial enthusiasm. And so as a founder, you love what you built so much and you believe in it so much and it just comes out of you. You can't help yourself. And you help people believe what you believe. And so they buy, right? And especially if you've called on the right people, because they need a solution for that. Like you said, everybody who's ever had a sales kickoff, that's one of those big companies that has thousands of salespeople, needs event software, right? If you're talking to the right people and you paint that vision, yeah, they're going to buy from you, especially if you're the founder and you're enthusiastic and you love what you built, you know?
And they have to believe in you because your product does not really exist in a state that you're
promised. Yes. You're building it right as they are using it, shall we say. And that happens a lot of times. And that's fine. I mean, people expect that. So I think it's great. So in the beginning, you had to just sell some people on the idea of just sell them on talking to you because you wanted to hear, would they use this? You know, is this something that seemed interesting to them, right? And then when you had the product close enough and you actually sold some things, and that was fun, you know, it started taking off. So what happened next? How long was it before you said, wow, I can't run this company and do all the selling and do all the other things that need to be done? How did you start growing? How did you start, you know, just growing your sales?
Yeah. So I think it was three stages for us. And the answer to your question is it took us too long before I started professionally growing the sales team. And one thing we didn't talk about EventMobi is that we are a bootstrap company. So very different than other VC-backed company. Yes. I put in about 100K of my personal saving. So cash in my 401K and, you know, all the saving I could get, and borrowed some from family and friends and put the money into growing the company. So the way we were building and scaling the company was very different. It wasn't like, okay, we're going to scale. So now we need a VP of sales and hire these five salespeople. We have a $1 million budget. So the first, I would say, from zero to the first 500K was very experimental. I didn't know if the company was going to exist the next few months. We had maybe two or three employees. It was all about this initial sales. Then after that, I couldn't do everything myself. So I had to hire someone to do demos. And everything was remote back then. Even for us, the company wasn't remote. Everyone was in person, but the sales was all online demos with, I think we were using WebEx or...
Way back then, it probably was WebEx.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what we were using. So many new things these days. But it was, I couldn't do all the demos. So I started hiring people and taught them how to demo the software while I was doing something else. So that was the initial growth of the sales team, was the next person that could just repeat what I was doing. We kind of kept hiring people like that, really young, right out of school. Again, keep in mind, we're bootstrapped, so we don't have a lot of money. So I'm hiring these really, really talented, hungry, and not necessarily, they didn't want to be salespeople. We weren't really hiring traditional salespeople. We were just hiring people that were empathetic. They were really good listeners and they were really good storytellers.
But stop there. Listen to that. They were empathetic and they were really good storytellers. Don't all salespeople need those traits?
Yeah. So that was the beginning. And I think I ran it like that until we had about 10, 12 people on the sales team, believe it or not. I was still managing marketing and support with a few sort of junior managers. And we hit 5 million, I think. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
This is too crazy. And we're also not growing. I was just basically being a bottleneck in the company. So I hired my first VP of sales while I internally promoted one of the, you know, great salesperson to be sales manager. But again, this was her first job. She became a sales manager and she was pretty good at it, to be honest with you. And she actually went on to be to do amazing things right now at a whole bunch of other companies. So really proud of her. Really great to see people you start working with early on and they do amazing in life later on. So anyways, so I hired the first VP and then he grew the company from, I would say 5-6 million to 10 million. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the growth kind of slowed down for us and then pandemic happened. And I went through a couple of different sales leader, but it was a very different sales structure when you're trying to create a stable, profitable company than when you're trying to scale the company. So it was three different phases, I think, for us in terms of sales leadership.
Yeah. I think that when we start, right, when we first start our companies and we're the founder and maybe we have a co-founder like you did at first and we do all the selling, we sort of get the sales process and the customer journey in our head, right? And then you were able to duplicate one part. And I think it was really smart of you actually to do it that way, because when we first hire salespeople and expect them to go out and sell just the way we did as a founder, it just doesn't work because they're not us. I mean, it's really simple, but you found a better way. You thought, well, there's one part that I know I can teach somebody to do is the demo. And that takes that off my plate. So I'm freed up to do other things. And I think that's really important. And then it sounds like those people grew into doing a lot of other parts of the sale once they got used to doing the demo and they watched you enough times, I'm sure, with selling, and then they were able to grow, right? And
maybe one other point that might be interesting in this conversation, because I think a lot of early CEOs that are trying to build sales team go through the initial sales staff for a lot of companies. I call them kind of full stack salesperson. They find the lead or they get the lead from the website. They qualify. They may not even think about qualifying, but they're kind of doing it in their head. Then they sell. Then they also renew. And then over time, you kind of have to separate these functions. Yeah. We had 6 salespeople when we realized it's not really efficient for the same salesperson to qualify the leads coming in because we had a lot of inbound leads coming in. So we separated those functions. Then we had really bad retention and we're like, oh, gee, why is that happening? Oh, it's the same person that sells. They're trying to sell new logos and they're trying to renew the old ones. These are 2 different salespeople. So we kind of separated those functions. And I think it was just going through different stages of sales that happen. And doing it too early, it's really bad. Doing it too late is also really bad. So getting the timing right for each company is really, really critical.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I do think in the beginning, they are, you know, end-to-end salespeople. That's what we have to do because that's the way it works best in the very beginning. But it does become apparent soon that some segmentation is needed. And I always say, you know, peel off an easy part and get that going, right? And then free up your salespeople to do even more of what they do best. And then maybe peel off another part. And renewals, for example, are something, there's a lot of talk about whether renewals belong with the original salesperson, whether there should be somebody who specializes in that. And I'm sort of somewhere in between. I believe that today we need a selling team that works together. So the original account manager that closed it should still be on that team and they have a role to play maybe even the founder still has a role to play if it's a very large, significant client. So they're on the team. There might be a customer success or a sales engineer, depending on what you sell, right, that would be on that team. And then the person who is going to really project manage the renewal, because that's a different skill, right? And they're going to make sure all the pieces are in place and all the players are used properly to get that renewal done. And I think that that is really a strategy that customers like. They don't want to be taken away from the person that they love that sold them the original deal. They don't want to feel like they can't talk to that person anymore, right? And we don't want the salesperson to feel like they can't talk to them either. But we do need specialists to help the customer be successful. And that part of that is helping them renew. So when we build these teams, I think we have a lot of power to help our customers even better.
I think you might be onto something. It's also dependent on the type of company. So for us, for example, in the event business, we are in a pseudo transactional business. So even though the same customer comes back and buys the product, we do have to sell every single year to the same customer. It's not a typical subscription. I think about 20% of our business is pure subscription. The rest is sort of on a per use basis.
So
for us, it's a little bit different. I know some of our, some other tools that I use, for example, we have a customer success manager. We don't even have a salesperson because they believe their product does a renewal, right? It's a very different kind of strategy in terms of sales. I love the team idea. But I think it also depends on the number of account each salesperson can handle.
Yes, exactly.
We are very high volume. I mean, I think our account managers right now handle about 150 to 200 accounts. Right. It's a lot. And we're trying to reduce that as much as possible because you can't even remember your customer.
Yeah. Who's my customer? Yeah.
So it's a bit different. I think every company will figure it out eventually. Honestly, it took us about 5 years. So if anyone listening and they're like, oh, I need to figure this out today, you won't, but that's okay.
Yeah. No, I think all the CEOs out there and all those who support CEOs that listen to the podcast have heard so many different stories, you know, from CEOs. And it's just great to hear that. Yeah. Like you said, hey, it'll work itself out. You will get there. You got to make a few mistakes in between. Everybody does, right? So, all right. So you've got this team kind of going and growing. And so take us up to, you know, maybe 10 years in. What was your sales team like and how did you scale the sales from there?
So 10 years in. So that's, let's say, right before pandemic. Is that a good time to stop?
Yeah.
Because it did change quite a bit during pandemic for us. If you think about it, I'll do a 30-second sort of tangent here talking about pandemic. And I think every business has a bit of a story. And I think from a sales model too, it was a big impact. We went from selling 10, 11 million to zero overnight because all the conferences got canceled. And we were giving credit because we didn't want, like, our customers were in pain because they couldn't run their conferences. So we knew some money would come later, but we had to cancel all these contracts. So then we had to build a new virtual platform. And at the beginning, we're like, well, no one's going to buy this, right? How are you running a conference virtually? Yeah. And then it was even bigger. Like, our business grew during the pandemic and we had downsized our sales team during the pandemic and our leads grew by a factor of five. So imagine, like, trying to keep up and how do you restructure a sales team, like, overnight? It was crazy time. So maybe we don't talk about that part because I'm trying to forget.
You're not the only one. I mean, business went to zero, but then for many companies, it went from zero to 100 in one second, right?
Exactly.
And that's how do you deal with that? For a lot of companies, it just created huge problems. And for those who were able to figure it out, they made a lot of money. And for some, they, you know, still are recovering from it. So I think it hit everybody a bit differently, depending on what industry you're in, like the hospitality industry, you know, and anyone who sold to it is still recovering. That was a really tough one. But I think that really helped you and in a lot of ways. So today we're talking a lot about agile selling, right? We know what agile means because you're an engineer, right? And in engineering and project management, we get it. And we talk about that, but now we're talking about agile selling because we need the outcomes to be different and we need the approach to be different. And we have to be really flexible because people are making decisions in a different way, right? We know there's more people involved. We know people are confused. They have information overload. The people who are on these buying committees have never purchased anything like this before in their life. They don't know, like, I've never purchased event software before. How do I purchase event software? And then they're talking to one of your salespeople, right? So if we don't learn to be more flexible and give up our rigid sales process that we're trying to step people through, right? Oh, you have to move to the next step so I can put it in the funnel properly in Salesforce and tell what the next stage is and then what my next step is. And it's so rigid, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying you shouldn't use Salesforce or any CRM. Of course you should. But we have to tune into the customer and the process that they're taking. So our typical discovery call isn't the same. Sometimes people are just, hey, show me a demo. I'm ready. And then you have to kind of ask them questions during the demo instead of having a discovery call and then a demo. Or maybe they did a demo on your website and now they want to talk to some of your customers or ask you for some insight on how other people like them did something, right? So we need the sellers to be a little bit more flexible, a little bit more agile, but I don't think we're teaching them that, right?
I agree. Even internally, I think about there's a little, you need process for a growing sales team. Right. Like when the startup days are over, you can't really run all around the place. And there's good salespeople that kind of take you from zero to 2, 3, 4, 5. And they're really good salespeople that take you to 10. And they're good salespeople that do enterprise sales for companies that make $1 billion. They're very different, I think, for a lot of companies. But I think what you mentioned, Alice, just focusing on the customer is key. Trying to, and I think I keep emphasizing this inside the company, and one of our values is actually empathy, is that try to put yourself in the other person's shoe and then what is it that they want? So it's a bit of a battle, to be honest, for sales leaders. I don't do any more selling. I was joking with you before podcast, they don't let me sell anymore. And I think that's a really good thing. I'm terrible at follow-up. I get people really excited and I never follow up. It's just like, it's the worst. But
need to hand those off, right? That's the process now. It's like CEO gets them excited, hands it off. Somebody else follows up.
Yeah. So we do need process, but I think we also need to pay attention to the changing times. And, you know, we're going through a recession. The customers' demand are different. You know, they're looking for cost saving and efficiency. So, you know, sales trainings need to evolve to kind of to address it. So, I mean, that's kind of the way the world is going, in a way that we have to be customer focused. But how do you do that in a way that you still have process within your company? Right. It's an art in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it is. So how are you preparing your salespeople? You got through COVID and you grew tremendously and you've got a sales team left from that was, you know, had to really change the way that they did everything during pandemic. So how are you preparing them now and how are you going to grow and thrive through this, you know, these uncertain times, right? With an impending recession.
Yeah. So one thing to note here is, and I think one thing we did really well at EventMobi, again, being a bootstrap company, we couldn't always go out and hire, you know, the top salespeople from another startup, from another sales, another SaaS company. We had a really interesting way because, as I was mentioning, we hire really young, talented individuals and they grow with the company. And believe it or not, our recent head of sales actually was this is, I think, maybe her second job. She's been with the company for over 8 years and she grew through the ranks. We use that quite a bit. So we hired SDRs and then they kind of within a year, they become account executives. Some of them become account managers. Mm-hmm. So we had this sort of two-prong strategy in terms of building the sales team. One was to promote from within, both from, you know, the bottom and also even for leadership. And the other was to hire staff from the industry. And I think a lot of companies struggle with this, is that do I hire a hungry, talented salesperson from somewhere else, or do I hire someone that is knowledgeable about my industry, about my product? And I don't know if there's a right answer to that, to be honest. I think you need a mix of two, and they can teach each other in some ways. So we did that. So the structure for sales team right now is I have a I actually handed off sales sort of management at the top level to our COO. He was the VP of customer success. And then after our previous VP of sales left, he kind of took over sales as well. He used to run sales division in LATAM. So that seemed natural. Our current head of sales for North America, again, was our sort of junior SDR that kind of grew through the rank. And she manages two sales managers, both for inbound business and renewal. So we kind of have those two teams separate. We do have a fairly big team of 10 in Germany. Well, they used to be in Germany, but now they're kind of distributed in Europe. Right. So they have their own sort of inbound and renewal process. They kind of work hand in hand. And then we have, I think right now, one or two people focused on channel sales. That's kind of the vision in a way. So we kind of have two very senior sales leader reporting to a COO. And then below them, there is basically three sales managers. And then the total team size is about 22, and it seems to work really well. And I think it creates, we're ready to scale, to be honest. I think, you know, a lot of events are going back in person in 2023, and the demand, you know, the recession is real. So it's very hard to forecast, but I think we have the right structure to scale the team in each of these teams. And it really comes down to sales leadership. So I can't really be involved, especially in a remote company, to dabble in sales too much. So it's just a matter of giving the team the resource and place to be able to make their own bets in some ways. And the other challenge is training and sales enablement. Yes. In a lot of ways. So I wish we had more budget so we could hire all these people, but it is a role that I think within our sales team, different people are taking responsibility to do it. We don't have anyone dedicated to this as much as we should. So it's a little bit tough for our sales leaders, but those are two areas that we're trying to focus in 2023 because, as we were talking about, the demand for customers are changing. They are expecting a different type of response and they have different pain points, and we need to train and enable the sales team to be able to help them in a way that they can benefit from, rather than, you know, let me show you 12 tools we have.
Yeah, let me overload you some more now that you've looked, you've been on 10 event websites trying to figure out what, let me give you.
Oh my God, that overload is real. That's one of the biggest complaints in our industry. There's so much noise and there's so many competitors, like the customers can't even remember who said what.
No, and especially I noticed during COVID, so many companies, you know, decided they were going to get into virtual events. So there is a lot of noise. So I think that's important to understand. And my friend Brent Adamson, he talks about customer confidence. He was a distinguished analyst at Gartner for many years, and he also came from CEB in the Challenger sale, but currently he's with another company that talks about value, but he still does a lot of kind of thought leadership on his own. And this whole idea around customer confidence, I think, is so important because customers don't have the confidence they need to make a good decision because there's so much information overload, because it's hard to navigate within their own company and understand how their company is going to buy this thing. Yeah. And as sellers, we have to be prepared to help them become more confident. And that's just something that we don't teach sellers how to do. So it's something for you to think about. It's like, how can you help your sales team understand that buyers lack confidence? And that's sometimes why they don't get a call back, because I don't know what to do next. And I don't know what to tell you, really, even though you were real nice and I liked your demo.
Yeah.
That's true. Right? So I think it's interesting, this whole thing around customer confidence, but I do think that sales enablement's important. But I love what you're doing, which is sharing it, right? So the sales leaders can't do all the sales enablement. They have a lot to do and they have a lot of coaching to do. But splitting it up amongst your team, that lets everyone have a chance to shine. What are you good at? Share that with everyone else, you know? And that's a great way to do sales enablement until you're ready to afford somebody who's going to focus completely on it. I think it just makes a lot of sense to share it. And I'll tell you something that I've shared with a lot of CEOs who don't have a huge budget for training or enablement is just do book clubs. Start book clubs at your company. Have you ever done that?
We have actually. We have, obviously, we use our own products. So we use our own, when we run events every other week, we call it Monday Mobi Live. And a portion of that is we have this video on demand section there. And anyone that posts, they go learn something, read a book, read a blog, watch, listen to a podcast. Yeah. And they write down what they, and they basically record a 5-minute video of themselves and they put it on our platform and we have a gamification system. So people get points for answering questions. So if you listen to someone or you watch somebody's video about something they learned, you get points. And at the end of the quarter, we get prizes away. I would love more people to participate. It's tough to find time these days.
I know.
But we do try to encourage it.
That's great. Yeah. It's simple and easy and fun. And I think that's a great way to do it. So you've got your sales team really running well, and they're reporting to the CEO, COO, which I love. But as the CEO, you still have a role in sales, even though it's changed and they won't let you sell anymore because your follow-up is terrible, as I heard you say. But what is your role in sales now? It sounds like part of your role is really supporting sales to do what they do best. But when else do you step in and get involved, or how do they use you as the CEO founder when they need you?
I think that's a really good question. I never thought about this before, but just the last 10 seconds, just thinking about it, I think there's two things I do really well. I don't know if maybe some of our salespeople listen to this and be like, oh, that's not but I'm obviously a product CEO. So I'm an engineer. I love innovation. I do pay attention to what our customers need and how we can kind of improve that with sort of changing our product. So I do bring that to the sales team, try to get them to understand why we build the product and how this kind of solves. Recently, actually over a year ago, we have a VP of product marketing. So he does that even better than I do. So we kind of tag team to do this thread, because I think it's really important for the whole company, not just the sales team, to really understand the product inside and out, understand how it helps the customer. And then the other part of it is because I love this industry, and I've been obviously in it for 14 years, and I know a lot of people, you know, in different corners of event and hospitality. So I try to bring a lot of that insight into the team. And I think what that gives sales team is context around, especially being remote. It's so hard for a salesperson to just
sit in the room,
put on your headphone and then just a blah, 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 just repeat the same thing. It's really hard. So you got to hear what's happening outside your bedroom that you're doing all these demos. So I try to bring that to them as much as possible through Slack in our, you know, company meetings. So that two aspect of product and industry insight, which I should probably do more of that. The rest of it is really the vision. It's like, where are we going as a company? What problem are we trying to solve? Who are we helping? And just repeating that over and over again. That helps the sales pitch align with where the company is going, because customers buy based on your vision and based on the salesperson.
Right?
They got to trust. I mean, talk about, you know, customer confidence. I mean, how do you get that confidence, right? So I don't know. Maybe those are the two things I do a really good job, or maybe I don't. We'll find out after.
We'll check in with those salespeople and find out, won't we? And tell me, as the CEO, how do you interact with the company's largest customers? And how do the salespeople know when to bring you in?
I wish I had more time to be more involved with the customers. To be honest, they don't bring me in to a lot of conversations. I have an incredibly capable sales team, and I'm really proud of it. So I try not to get in their way as much as possible.
That's an important thing.
I think we have a great product, and honestly, the product sells itself. So if salespeople are really good at demoing and, you know, finding out what the problem is, and then focusing on the right pieces of software to focus on helping the customer understand what they can get out of it, I don't really have to be involved, to be honest. Where I do get involved is that where the customer is trying to invest heavily into their infrastructure and their team around our software, and they need confidence that, hey, what's the vision of the company? Who is the person that's leading the charge? And honestly, I think every quarter I talk to maybe one or two big customers at most. Or I sometimes I speak at their events. That's usually the most, because most of them are event sort of organizers, and they love to have kind of a CEO talk about different topics, and especially virtual in pandemic has been really big for a lot of different sectors of our industry.
Yeah.
So they love to have me at their events. So I talk about, you know, our struggle and how we've kind of changed as a company. Because I honestly, the last 2 years has been like, I feel like I ran another startup inside, you know, a stable company, which is good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, well, you're not alone in that one. I think a lot of people felt like a startup in the pandemic for sure. And now, again, trying to make the changes we need to thrive in this uncertain economy. So, you're not alone there for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you have an awesome company and an awesome team, and it, and you're the kind of CEO that a lot of people would love to work for. So thank you so much. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your journey with us. And I can't wait to hear whether those salespeople think that you're helpful, but I'm sure they do. And I think it's an important thing for CEOs to keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening in the industry and share that with their sales teams. Because although they're reading some stuff, they don't have a lot of time, and you know how to pick out what is important. So I'm sure that they do appreciate it. And I think that's a very important thing for a CEO to do to support sales, is help them stay current on the industry and the changes that are happening. So,
yeah. And Alice, I think you're going to have 20 new listeners to your podcast, and all of them are going to get points for answering a question about your podcast.
That's
so, it. We'll put it in our MMLs at Event Mobi. So again, thanks for having me here. It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.